Welcome to Bruderhof Radio. I'm your host, Andrew Zimmerman. Today on Bruderhof Radio, we examine music and how it can be used as a vehicle for social change. To obtain different perspectives, we spoke first with Pete Seeger, self-described river singer and longtime folk musician. Then, a conversation with two members of the Puerto Rican punk band Reconstruction. For many of us, Seeger was the man who, for more than 50 years, voiced the concerns of several generations of social, political, and environmental activists. Others will remember him for his banjo playing and distinctive voice. Although generally classified as a folk musician, Seeger prefers a different moniker.
It's really kind of silly to use the word folk music. It means such different things. Once upon a time, it meant the music of the peasant class, ancient and anonymous. Now most people think a folk singer is somebody, male or female, standing in front of a microphone with an acoustic guitar singing a song they've written. If it's an acoustic guitar and they're in front of a microphone, they're a folk singer. But if they're an old grandmother in a rocking chair singing an ancient lullaby, why, oh no, they're just an old grandmother singing an ancient lullaby. They're not a folk singer. A folk singer has an acoustic guitar and stands at a microphone and sings in a coffee house. So I use the term folk music as little as possible. Call me a river singer. I sing up and down the Hudson.
Now you want higher wages, let me tell you what to do. Got to talk to the workers in the shop with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, boys, won't be long. You got shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take your kids to the seashore. Of course, it ain't quite that simple, so I better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Because if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, we'll all be waiting till Judgment Day. We'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the straw boss then, boys.
Now you know you're underpaid, but the boss... Seeger has always been identified with the progressive end of the political spectrum, and over the years, many of his listeners, including the FBI and other government entities, have labeled him a communist. Although not currently a Communist Party member, he was at one time.
Meanwhile, I'd joined the Young Communist League in Harvard College, and in those days, the Communist Party had like almost 100,000 members, and the big disagreement was there were also many people on the left who were Trotskyists, and some were pacifist socialists, like A.J. Mustick. I think if I had my wits about me, I would have joined A.J. Mustick, because I think he really hit the nail on the head. He says, you take power with the gun, and then you have to maintain it with the gun. And it seems slower to work without the gun, but in the long run, it's the way to get the changes needed. I didn't drop out of the communist movement about till the 1950s. I didn't like being a member of a secret organization anyway. However, I learned a lot. I'll say that the communists I knew and know now are extremely dedicated people and trying hard, even though I feel that we made some pretty major mistakes, like trusting Stalin. On the other hand, I still call myself a communist in the sense that I think a world where we live in communities and take care of each other is frankly the only way the world will survive.
Even after abandoning strict communism, Pete continued to sing for and about the underprivileged, and he hasn't stopped since.
I was making up songs for the unions and was singing with Lee Hayes and others. We had a group called the Almanac Singers. We put out an album called Talking Union, which is still available through the Folkways Record Company. Stalin, in effect, in 1939, said, you're going to sick Hitler on me? Well, I'll sick him on you. See how you like it. And he signed the Non-Aggression Pact. And for 2 years, communists in USA were all for peace. That's, the Yanks are not coming. Then June 22nd, Hitler invaded the Soviet Union, and Woody Guthrie walked into my door the following day, I think, or maybe 2 days later, with a kind of a wry grin on his face. He said, I guess we won't be singing any more peace songs, will we? I said, do you mean to say I have to support Winston Churchill? Yep, Churchill says all aid to the gallant Soviet allies. I says, is this the same Churchill who in 1920 said, strangle the Bolshevik infant in its cradle? Woody says, yep, Churchill flip-flopped, we got to flip-flop. So we could quit singing peace songs, and 6 months later, Woody wrote a song, which is still sung, a great song called The Reuben James, The Sinking of the Reuben James, and we stopped singing Union songs. The communists persuaded the rest of the Union movement to have a no-strike pledge for the duration of the war, and we sang round and round Hitler's grave, round and round we go, round and round Hitler's grave, he won't get up no more. So in other words, I've been involved in singing songs of social protest since a teenager. Oh, I remember 1938, a delegation of sharecropping farmers came to Washington, and my father recorded them in early recording equipment at the Library of Congress, and one of the songs was, Raggedy, raggedy are we, just as raggedy can be. We don't get nothing for our labor, so raggedy, raggedy are we. In a time-honored folk fashion, these were new words to an old gospel hymn, How Beautiful Heaven Would Be, Will Be. The same songwriter, his name was John Handcox, that's H-A-N-D-C-O-X, a tall, thin black man with blue eyes, though. His great-grandfather was the master who raped his slave. But John Handcox also wrote one of the best-known Union songs in the country, We're Gonna Roll, We're Gonna Roll, We're Gonna Roll the Union On. We're going to roll, we're going to roll, we're going to roll the Union on. So I was aware of these things even before I thought of myself a singer. Actually, I wanted to be a journalist. When I left college, I dropped out of college in my second year and tried to get a job on a newspaper, but I failed completely. Meanwhile, I had an aunt who taught school. She said, Pete, come sing some of your songs for my class. I can get you $5. Seemed like stealing, take money for what I'd done all my life for the fun of it. But I went and took the money and quit looking for an honest job. So, in other words, I've been singing these kind of songs for 60 or 70 years. And after World War II, the main thing was trying to keep the Cold War from turning into a hot war. And I helped make up songs back in those days, and that's when Where Have All the Flowers Gone was written in the mid-50s. If I had a hammer, I just put a tune to Lee Hay's words. That was in 1949. We Shall Overcome was taught me by a union organizer in the South who'd learned it from black women tobacco workers who had changed an old gospel song from I Will Overcome to We Will Overcome.
My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Sing it! Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Hardly a single piece of music that couldn't be used in some way in the wrong way. Even a beautiful, peaceful hymn like Amazing Grace could be used to reinforce a sermon saying, don't try and change the world. Just pray to God that he will change the world. And that, I feel, is a recipe for disaster. And on the other hand, I also agree that some angry music can intensify an already bad situation. So generally, I try and sing songs that will soothe the savage breast. Keep in mind that any song can do different things, though, at different times. Some songs simply help you forget your troubles. Some songs help you understand your troubles. And occasionally, some songs help inspire people to do something about their troubles. I've tried to tell stories which will start people thinking, and tried to sing songs that will encourage them to sing along, because I believe participation is what the human race needs. Machinery and mass production have made us consumers, not participators. Once upon a time, we participated in sports and work and prayer and recreation, all sorts of things. Now, they say, oh, no, I earn my money now. I'm just going to sit on the couch and watch somebody else entertain me, watch an expert athlete, watch an expert comedian, and foolish people. There's husband and wife sitting on a couch looking at the expert lover pretend to kiss the other expert lover.
While Pete may share a guarded pessimism about society's postmodern alienation, he nevertheless remains a firm believer in the power of music to stir people to action. Communication, he says, whether through music or other forms, is the only way we can begin to solve some of the world's complicated problems.
Well, you might say a song is a heightened form of words. Poetry is a heightened form of words. You can't explain in words, though, exactly what music does, or any art. All you can say is that it does something. It does affect people. There's an ancient Arab proverb. When the king puts the poet on his payroll, he cuts off the tongue of the poet. And Plato is supposed to have said, it's very dangerous to allow the wrong kind of music in the Republic. Nobody can explain exactly why or how. It's probably different for any two people. I've often said that what's a good song to one person is a pain in the ear to somebody else. However, I am absolutely convinced that if there's a human race in 100 years, it'll be partly because the entire human race realizes it's better to talk than shoot. But when words fail, they'll try other ways of communicating, whether it's pictures or numbers or melodies or rhythms or food. There's hundreds of possible ways to communicate. Smiles, gestures. And the thing we have to keep in mind is if we don't try and communicate with each other, there is no hope for this human race. I mean, I'm willing to communicate with the Ku Klux Klan if they want me to come and sing to them. I'll do it. I'm willing to listen to them. Although the Ku Klux Klan threw stones at me, you know, 50 years ago in Peekskill, I and my family went to the concert of Paul Robeson, and along with 10,000 other people, we had stones thrown at us as we left the concert. Every single window in the car was broken. And there was a policeman standing about 50 feet away from one stone thrower, and I jammed on the brake and tried to roll the window down. It was so splintered I could only get it about an inch down. I shouted, "Officer, aren't you going to do something?" This guy was throwing stones only 50 feet away from him. And the policeman just said, "Move on, move on." In other words, he knew all about it.
Even today, 50 years after his run-in with the Ku Klux Klan at the Peekskill riots, Seeger doesn't shy away from controversy. We asked him about his ongoing involvement in the environmental movement, specifically in New York State.
Well, it's true. I'm into the environmental problems, but I interpret this very broadly. It's not just clean water and clean air, but gardens, for example. I sang 2 weeks ago at a big rally to try and save the community gardens that Giuliani wants to sell off to the highest bidder and bulldoze. It's very stupid. The gardens are making New York a better place to live. But really, I do believe it's one huge crisis the human race faces. We will either solve it or it will solve us, I believe, within a century. Maybe we got as many as 200 years, but I doubt it. We might not even have 50 before some stupid person will do such a disastrous thing that the human race can't recover from it.
Me and my wife got all over town. Everywhere we went, the people would turn us down. Lord, it's a bourgeois town. Ooh, it's a bourgeois town. I got the bourgeois blues. I'm gonna spread the news all around.
It's not hard to hear the difference between the metal-charged punk rock of New York City's Reconstruction and the twang of Seeger's five-string banjo, but similarities do exist. According to lead singer Alano Baez and guitarist Fidel Pollino, the band is, in many ways, following in the footsteps of artists like Pete Seeger. They, too, are firm believers in music's power to persuade and inspire. Their cause is the decolonization and liberation of Puerto Rico. The relationship between the United States and Puerto Rico began formally in 1898, when the U.S. acquired the island at the end of the Spanish-American War. In 1952, Puerto Rico became a U.S. Commonwealth, and for years Puerto Ricans have disagreed over whether the island should retain its political status, become one of the states, or gain independence. There is no doubt that the members of Reconstruction are passionate about the independence of Puerto Rico. The struggle against American imperialism is exemplified, they say, by the plight of a Puerto Rican island called Vieques, where the U.S. Navy operates one of the largest live weapons training grounds in the world. When an errant bomb killed civilian security guard David Rodriguez during naval war games on April 19th, the independence movement renewed its call for a free Puerto Rico.
It's a small island off the coast of Puerto Rico where 75% of the island is the U.S. Navy. And they practice war games there, and they train troops to invade other parts of Latin America. Yeah. And the people there, who are predominantly fishermen, fisherwomen, have been involved in a struggle to get the Navy out. And that's been going on for quite some time now. And that's kind of like the front lines for Puerto Rico, because that's where the Navy is like so entrenched and is basically saying to the people, we don't give a damn what you're about. We're going to practice, and we're going to drop bombs in your backyard.
Yeah. Really quick to note, which is the... Vieques has the highest cancer rate in all of Puerto Rico, period. You know, women there, first of all, just real quick, the way they're trying to do it is very, very weird, in the sense that they'll set up a hospital and there'll be no maternity ward. So women don't give birth there. They'll be flown to Fajardo, which is the nearest point.
Yeah, what they've done is they've got a situation where if they can depopulate Vieques, they can take over Vieques completely. They have 75% right now. They surround the population. If they can show that no one's been born in Puerto Rico, then they can take over the entire island and just move the Puerto Ricans to the mainland, which is Puerto Rico itself. And that's been going on right now. So it's like it's essentially the front lines of the Puerto Rican struggle for liberation.
In the stinking yell of a death row cell, where the loudest voice never makes a sound, and he's waiting.
With its varied Latin influence and innovative style, Reconstruction is obviously about more than just punk rock. Likewise, the scope of their philosophy includes more than just an independent Puerto Rico. Their recent album Liberation Day contains a song about Pennsylvania death row inmate Mumia Abu-Jamal, a former Philadelphia journalist whose case has garnered widespread support among people who believe he received a biased and unfair trial. And Reconstruction continues to support other causes. Baez and Paulino explain the band's beginnings.
Well, the basic idea with starting the band was to create a music that spoke of our experience. Musically, artistically, we've been into everything from salsa y merengue to, punk rock. And we didn't hear anything that spoke of our experiences culturally, politically. And our idea was to create something that spoke about where we were coming from and what we've seen as a colonized people and as a people that have been involved in the resistance struggle for over 500 years.
Well, our message, I think, is for anybody who's been oppressed and anybody who, needs to be uplifted in many, many different ways. And like he said earlier, as far as like us playing the music that we play, representing the influences that we have, I think goes a little bit further than just saying, we need to be uplifted. This is our culture. It's a lot more, to it.
I mean, we feel there is a unity among sufferers. There is a unity among people that have been downpressed, whether they be Boricuas or whether they be Dominicanos or whether they be,
anything.
Anyone who has been downpressed, anyone who understands what it is to fight back. And that's who we're trying to speak to. And we come from it from our direction of being Latino. But at the same time, we know that African Americans understand where we're coming from. Native Americans understand where we're coming from. Rastas understand where we're coming from. We've gotten people who initially dig the music, and then they get the concept and they get the message, and the message moves them more than just simply a chance to dance. And, so it's kind of like, dancing and revolution coming together, which is the beauty of it,
One of the good things, if you ever have ever seen us, whether it be at a benefit or a show or a regular gig, is the different variety of people that go to our shows. Like you said earlier, some people just dig the music, and then as time goes on, they're into the message. We also have the reverse effect. Some people who necessarily may not dig punk rock or necessarily heavy music at first, but are involved in the struggle, and as time goes on, they learn to appreciate what it is that we're trying to do.
At the same time, we want people to understand that the liberation struggle in Puerto Rico is tied in with the larger struggle, and it's about liberating Puerto Rico and then letting Puerto Rico liberate the rest of the world. And that's what will happen. And that has to be understood.
The band, which formed in 1995, has met with limited commercial success, but that doesn't bother them. Even if their audience remains primarily punks, squatters, and homeless street activists, the members of Reconstruction say they will continue to forego opportunities for commercialization and greater distribution if it means compromising their message or selling out.
There is a business side to this, but I think that what we're doing is necessarily for the business, but because it's in our hearts and it's what we really believe as a, not only independence for Puerto Rico, but, liberation as a society in general. And, if you take that into, in mind, then everything will fall into place, as time goes on.
The point is you create your art for what you believe, and that's what you do. We understand that there are people trying to co-opt art. There are people trying to co-opt revolution. And there are quite a few artists that have been co-opted, and they will continue to be artists that have been co-opted, just like there have been average folks who have been co-opted. But it's about creating what you believe in and continue with that. If we ever gave any thought to being co-opted or to being commercial, then I don't think we'd be doing what we do, because it'd be very easy to write the type of lyrics that Korn writes, for instance. I would have no problem writing that if I was of that mentality. So it's not about that. It's not about MTV. It's about speaking. It's about speaking out. It's about creating.
Currently, 15 Puerto Rican nationalists are serving 15 to 100-year sentences in federal prisons for a series of violent acts, including bombings, that they committed in the 1970s and 80s. These freedom fighters, as well as countless others who choose peaceful forms of protest, are known as independentistas because they favor a free Puerto Rico. Although Reconstruction takes a nonviolent approach to Puerto Rican liberation through their music, they understand that they are publicizing and supporting a controversial issue, which is unpopular even with many of their countrymen.
Well, I mean, there's been, persecution of independentistas for hundreds of years, not just the last 100 years under, U.S. control, but 400 years prior to that under Spanish control. There's been persecution. There's been a generation of political prisoners in Puerto Rico ever since the U.S. took over and prior to that. So, you know, if speaking out means that you end up in prison or you end up executed, it's easier not to speak out. If you're just looking to try to feed your children and survive, you're not going to speak out when you know somebody's waiting to pounce on you. The FBI has files on pretty much every independentista in Puerto Rico. And that includes, you know, folks who are lawyers. That includes folks who are doctors. That includes folks who are, you know, women with children. If you've been found to be an independentista, there's a file on you. So it's not the smartest thing to come out and speak out. I mean, you know, you have to understand in the case of Puerto Rico, we're up against the largest, you know, terrorist in the history of mankind, which is Babylon, which is the United States. So it's not about the simple thing of saying, oh, we're going to free Tibet against China, which is over there. It's like, no, we're against this monster. We're in the entrails of the monster right here. Mm. So it's not a wise thing for most Puerto Ricans to come out and say, oh, soy independentista, and that's it. Mm. Because, you know, for everyone who speaks out, there's an FBI agent waiting to mark your name down and wait for you. And for us, you know, resistance comes from birth. You know, it's not something we learn from a book. It's not something someone teaches us. You know, from the moment we're born, we know it's time to resist or die. You know, and there are Taínos historically that can tell us what happens if you resist or if you don't resist. So we've understood, and we, you know, we spend our days resisting every day. You know, it's walking the street. It's understanding that for us, resistance is life. You know, it's, if you look into the thesaurus, resistance is life.
Thanks for joining us on this edition of Bruderhof Radio as we examine the music of folk singer Pete Seeger and the Latin punk band Reconstruction. We'll leave you with Reconstruction's version of the Bob Marley song, War.
Until the philosophy which holds one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned.
Bruderhof Radio, which is produced by Andrew Zimmerman, is a project of the Bruderhof Communities, a communal movement based on Christ's Sermon on the Mount. In particular, the teachings concerning brotherly love and love of enemies, mutual service, nonviolence, and the refusal to bear arms. Instead of holding assets or property, we share everything in common, and each member gives his or her talents, time, and effort wherever they are needed. To obtain more information about Bruderhof Radio or the Bruderhof Communities, call 914-658-8351 or write to Woodcrest Bruderhof, Rifton, New York, 12471.